Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The ride-hailing company Uber is no stranger to controversy and regulatory issues. Over the past few months, the company has been dealing with sexual harassment allegations and complaints about an aggressive, unrestrained workplace culture. In February, Uber CEO Travis Kalanick quit Donald Trump's business advisory group after pressure from customers and employees who opposed the administration's immigration policies. Later that month, Kalanick got into an argument with a driver over falling fares, and it was videotaped. Bloomberg reported that the video showed off the CEO's pugnacious personality and short temper, which may cause some investors to question whether he has the disposition to lead a $69 billion company with a footprint that spans the globe. As Uber finds itself mired in regulatory and labor issues, major cities across the country and really the world are trying to deal with another aspect of the ride-hailing industry, and that is major traffic jams. According to the San Francisco Examiner, nearly 45,000 Uber and Lyft drivers are now working in San Francisco, which is the third most congested city in the country and the fourth most congested in the world. This is according to INRIX, a company that releases annual congestion studies. So what are the solutions to the Bay Area's increased congestion? Surely you have experienced all of this traffic. And how should cities regulate ride-hailing companies like Uber and Lyft to ease up the congestion? Today, we are joined by Stephen Hill, a writer, lecturer, and author of many books, including Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
It's great to have you. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez covers transportation for the San Francisco Examiner. He also writes the weekly political On Guard column. Joe reports that San Francisco officials are so fed up over traffic caused by Uber and Lyft, they are considering suing the state of California to help alleviate the problem. And Joe joins me here in studio. Hi, Joe. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Nice to see you, Rose.
The first question that I think about when I see so much traffic in the Bay Area, and I've seen major changes even in the last year, is why didn't the city put a cap on how many Uber and Lyft drivers can be on the road at any given time?
Sure. And just as a quick caveat, you know, the traffic congestion is due to a lot of things. There's population growth, a huge boom of people here in the Bay Area. I talked to INRIX just a few weeks ago. Construction is having a big impact on traffic downtown. But certainly officials are looking at Uber and Lyft and going, well, you're mostly concentrated downtown. Mm-hmm. So when you've got thousands of drivers on the road, you're not spread evenly throughout the city. You're in downtown, you're in the Marina, you're in the Mission, you're in these few neighborhoods. And in numbers far greater than cabs. For context, that 45,000 number, taxi cabs, there are 1,800 in San Francisco, 1,800 versus 45,000. Now, the reason that the taxi industry historically had caps was to give, you know, taxi drivers the ability to make ends meet, to get a full living wage. But of course, some may argue that that went too far, and then that led to a dearth of taxis and an opening for Uber and Lyft to move in and make a good business out of it. But right now, the Uber and Lyft is regulated by the state. The city wants to put a cap. The city wants to manage traffic. The city wants that data. They can't do much. The state, the California Public Utilities Commission, was awarded the ability to regulate Uber and Lyft and other ride hails, what are called in California transportation network companies. And so far, they haven't shown any inkling of getting anywhere near putting a cap on cars in the road.
Have you interviewed members? Have you asked them why?
The CPUC is in the middle of like different phases of its regulations, and they have taken filings. I've read hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of filings from the SFMTA here in the city, from the airport that's sick of dealing with Uber and Lyft's kind of running scofflaw on its roads, from Uber and Lyft themselves. And the commission in its rulings and in its discussions publicly is taking a very slow, metered approach. Phase one of the proceedings was a few years ago. That set down the basic regulations. Phase two just concluded. And phase three right now, the big bugaboo for phase three is they're going to deal with whether or not they're going to fingerprint and criminal background check how strictly to criminal background check the drivers.
I'm sure this might be surprising to a lot of people. A lot of people don't know how this industry is regulated or not.
Right.
So why is it that the state of California has the authority to determine how many cars are on the road, but cities don't?
Sure. So the Uber and Lyft argued heavily for this when they first kind of came on the scene in 2011. They argued that they were more similar to town cars and limousines and how they operated, that you couldn't ask for a ride beforehand, right? Because you couldn't fix for a ride beforehand, they fell into this regulatory category like town cars and limos, and then you would would have to be regulated by the state and not cities. Whereas taxis, it's all kind of like as you go, you're going to hail them on the street, because you can't hail an Uber on the street. They argued that they fell into a different regulatory scheme, and that argument carried the day. And now we have them regulated by the state, much like limousines and town cars are, and how they've been for a long time. Now, there is a question about the CPUC's ability to regulate them. They don't have very many inspectors statewide. It's actually a very small organization, and they mostly focus on utilities like PG&E. So then some may say, well, why do we have a utility regulator looking over Uber and Lyft? And others have asked that same question. Now you have the DeSoto Cab Company of San Francisco, which is now called Flywheel Taxi, suing the state, saying we want cities to regulate. We've had SFMTA filing regularly, legally, to demand the ability to regulate in the cities. And that's why we're seeing this frustration from city leaders, because they can't really do much.
Stephen, what would you add to this? A lot of people don't know that it's the state of California that has to make these decisions.
Well, I think what's sort of beneath even that, the subtext, is that how much Americans in general and San Franciscans and Californians are enthralled to technology. And so that's really why Uber and Lyft were able to convince both San Francisco initially, because initially, you know, the mayoral administration of Ed Lee was very hands-off and like, you know, well, we can't do much. We don't want to get in the way of technology. You know, we want to encourage new technologies, and we want to be a center for innovation and creative destruction and all the terms that were thrown around. And then also Jerry Brown. You know, I think in many ways Jerry Brown has been a pretty decent governor, but when it comes to Silicon Valley and to technology, he is in thrall to Silicon Valley. He recognizes it's a big job creator, it's a big wealth generator, and so generally in Sacramento, there's been this very hands-off sort of get out of the way of technology. We want to be at the forefront of this sort of thing. And many people, you know, like myself, were saying for a long time, hey, okay, fine, you know, you want to encourage technology innovation. No one argues with that. But to just blindly look away and watch what's about to happen to these cities, I mean, it was predictable what was going to happen. You know, last year I was in Berlin for about half of the year, and they're very pro-innovation, pro-technology, but they have decent taxi cab business, and they have good public transit. And so there's really no opportunity for Uber or Lyft or any of these kind of ride-sharing companies to really get much of a foothold. And in addition, these, you know, countries in Germany and Europe and other places said, you know, all right, you want to operate here, fine, but you need to follow our taxi laws. They didn't buy this idea that, which Uber put forward, that we're not a taxi company, we're a technology company. In fact, Uber's name used to be just Uber. They changed their name to Uber Technologies just to be able to make these kind of arguments. And so they were able to convince regulators that, look, we're something new, we're something hip and cool and different, and you shouldn't regulate us like our competitors in the taxi business. And you know, so a lot of these taxi companies, and I recently was in Las Vegas speaking at a conference for the National Limousine Association. A lot of us, we talk about taxis, but the limo companies themselves are being hurt badly by this. So a lot of mom-and-pop limo companies at this national conference, you know, they started out with two cars and expanded to five, six, seven cars. These are small companies, and they're being put out of business by Uber, and their chief complaint is, we don't operate by the same rules as them. They have less regulations, less rules that they have to follow, and it's because of this being in thrall with, this is technology, this is hip, this is cool, get out of the way, government, so that we can thrive and show you how the future is going to unfold. Well, now we see how the future is unfolded. Traffic congestion, terrible treatment of drivers, you know, on and on and on, the parade of horribles, the lack of background checks, underinsured vehicles. This is what we've produced here because we took this hands-off look both at the state level and here at the local level in San Francisco.
Stephen, you mentioned Berlin. How do other cities regulate Uber and Lyft? How do they decide, for example, how many drivers to allow on the roads at any given time?
Well, I mean, what they do is they just say, look, you're a taxi company. Don't try to tell us you're not. You are. You provide the same service. We don't care that you have an app and you have some new technology to connect driver and passenger. I mean, you know, when taxi cabs put an electronic meter into their car, did that make them a technology company instead of a taxi livery service? No, of course not. So they just don't buy this line. They just say you have to follow the rules. But then the second thing that they do is it's regulated so that you don't have too many cars on the road. And I think a little history here is instructive. You know, if you go back and look at the history of livery, as it's called, which is just the name for when you professionally provide a ride for someone, you can go back to the 17th century. And you can see at that time, what you see century after century is a pattern. When the economy is tough, people jump into whatever vehicle they have available at the time to offer someone a ride for money. So, you know, in the 17th century, you had people in economic tough times who were using horse-drawn carriages. And it led to, at one point, King Charles I of England ordered that these coaches for hire in the street had to be licensed by the state to restrain the multitude and promiscuous use of coaches, as the order said. And then you flash forward to the Great Depression here in the United States, and you can see that once again, people jumped into whatever vehicle they had, whether they were owned a vehicle or borrowed it or whatever, you know, they had to do in order to offer a ride for hire. And so you saw this proliferation, and then suddenly you saw the New York Times and politicians saying, too many cars in the streets, we've got to regulate it. Not only was it the number of cars, but you had these rogue drivers who were robbing people, and you know, certainly you couldn't keep track of the quality of drivers. So that led to what we know today as the medallion system. That's where it comes from, is this type of overcrowding. And so I think, you know, what I think we can learn from the recent years is that there were certainly not enough taxis on the streets to service the demand, as Joe alluded to earlier. But you can go too far the other way, where you have too many vehicles on the street. We've seen that historically in other time periods, and now we're at that moment. So the question is, will San Francisco, if it can get permission from the state, be able to regulate the number of cars on the street? And that's where we can take lessons from places like London, Stockholm. They have congestion pricing, congestion zones. There are all sorts of things that we can be doing. And in fact, the Uber technology could be used to track its cars so that we know how many of its cars are in any particular part of the city at any one time and regulate that. So the answers are all in front of us if we can muster the political will to make this happen.
So playing off, you alluded earlier to tracking the vehicles. Uber does allow does have a system called Movement that they recently released in January that shows basically a heat map of where its vehicles are at any given time. And after I wrote the story about, you know, the city, about Supervisor Asha Safai considering suing the state for this data from Uber, a lot of people ask me, well, why doesn't the city just use Movement? Why don't they just use this heat map of where the vehicles are in order to track where they are so they could do better planning? And that answer is actually goes into what the city wants to do. The city wants to be able to see every time an Uber makes a U-turn, every time they, you know, stop, double park in front of someone and stop up a car in front of them. They want very fine, detailed information, and Uber so far has shielded that information from the public and said that this is proprietary data. If Lyft sees this data, they're going to know way more about our business. They're going to be able to reverse engineer it and hurt us commercially. And that argument so far has held water with the state.
What have supervisors told you about how they would limit the number of drivers on the roads at any given time?
You know, I think that probably the one most likely to advocate for limiting cabs on the road at any given time, or Ubers or Lyfts, would be Supervisor Aaron Peskin. But, you know, they haven't so far said that they want to cap the number yet. They have been very cautious and said, we just want the data first. We want to go in there and find out new information. We don't want to go in there with eyes closed. We want to figure out what's happening.
And so the state of California would be able to get that information. Or
so Uber,
how would that work?
Uber and Lyft are required to, under the regulations the state made, give a whole host of data to the state of California. The state of California requested this data because they wanted to know a whole lot of things. They wanted to know if Uber and Lyft were discriminating against people with disabilities. They wanted to know if Uber and Lyft were redlining, if they were going into certain neighborhoods over others more often, or abandoning passengers in certain neighborhoods. They wanted to know all this stuff. So they requested data from Uber and Lyft about specific individual trips en masse. And they have that data. They have received that data. But it's all under lock and key. If much public data is available to the public. You can make a public records request, and I can get the emails sent by, I don't know, some staffer from a transit agency. I could get all their emails tomorrow. But you can't get this data about Uber and Lyft because they've made certain legal arguments that say, hey, this is proprietary. We need to protect our business. And the state so far has said okay to that.
Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez covers transportation for the San Francisco Examiner and writes a weekly political On Guard column. Joe reports that San Francisco officials are so fed up over traffic caused by Uber and Lyft in the Bay Area, they're considering suing the state of California to help alleviate the problem. We're also joined today by Stephen Hill, a writer, lecturer, and author of many books, including Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. And today we are talking about how Uber and Lyft affect Bay Area traffic. We've seen lots of changes over the last couple of years. According to the Examiner, about 45,000 Uber and Lyft drivers are now working in San Francisco. It's the third most congested city in the country and the fourth in the world, according to INRIX. People are very desperate in this economy, as we've done so many shows on this. People from as far as San Diego are driving to San Francisco to drive for Uber and Lyft, sometimes sleeping in their cars, working 10 to 12 hours a day for 3 days straight. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about Uber and Lyft? If you drive for these companies, we'd love to hear from you. This is not a show to slam drivers at all. This is a show to really look at these companies, how they're affecting cities, and whether there should be a cap on the number of drivers on any given day and at what time, and how do you make those decisions? And also, what changes have you seen in your area? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Peter in San Francisco. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I just want to say, Joe, I read your column all the time. I love it.
Thanks.
But my question is this. I worked in the hotel business until recently for many years as a concierge, so I had a lot of questions about transportation. And what I've been able to ascertain is that the difference really is that, I mean, from the consumer end, is that taxis are regulated by the state and they're insured. Whereas if you get into an Uber, really, you don't know what the regulations are for their insurance. And if their vehicle's inspected, you know, taxi cabs are inspected by the state and city. Uber vehicles, I don't know who inspects them. So really, I think what it ultimately comes down to is, given that information that's out there, isn't it a case that it's people who just want to push a button and there's a car, and not think about the rest?
Yeah, as far as who's inspecting who, there's been an evolution of sorts of that in Uber and Lyft over the years. Originally, Lyft, for instance, had drivers inspect other drivers' vehicles and give each other the okay. That was the system in California for a long time, until these phase two proceedings by the California Public Utilities Commission concluded, and the new rules have them require them to go to licensed inspectors. But the inspection requirements are still far, far less stringent than exists for taxis in a number of ways and a number of measures. Definitely, the regulations are far tighter for taxis. There are cameras on board taxis to record, you know, if there's like a crime or you're attacked or anything like that. You know, the insurance level is generally higher in taxis. Insurance has gotten better for Uber and Lyft passengers, but for Uber and Lyft drivers, it's this unique system where you're more – the Uber car is more covered by insurance when the app is on and a passenger is in the vehicle. When the Uber driver is driving around on their own looking for a fare, that insurance level drops. It's completely different. So if you're an Uber driver, you may not
industry,
be
it's scared. Contrary to industry standard. I mean, your average Pizza Hut delivery driver, they're covered from the time they get in that car, make the delivery, and get back to the restaurant. There's no other industry that has been able to carve out this kind of donut hole of coverage that, you know, that drives for a living.
Well, thank you for calling in, Peter. Let's go next to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I do not have a smartphone, so I am unable to use any of these ride-hailing services. But I do use a wheelchair, and I'm curious, are they mandated to have vehicles that accommodate wheelchairs or not? Because I know that I see yellow cabs bouncing around in the East Bay and in San Francisco that have Lyft vehicles, or like minivans that have, you know, lifts that go down that aren't automatic but that just come out. And I didn't know if there was any regulation that covered these private companies that ensure that they are accessible to people who use wheelchairs.
The short answer is no. They are not required to service to have ramp wheelchair vehicles, and they don't have a lot of them. I did a story about this a while back. Please, if you're interested, go ahead and Google SF Examiner Mendoza Uber with a Z. Basically, this woman single-handedly pushed Uber to have wheelchair ramp vehicles, and now they have, I think, two in all of San Francisco and perhaps the Bay Area, because Uber sees it as a chicken and the egg problem. People with wheelchairs know that Uber didn't have wheelchair vehicles for a long time. When they finally did get vehicles, just two, Uber didn't see the demand there. Of course, the demand wasn't there because not a lot of people know that those two vehicles exist. So until the demand is there, they don't want to grow the program, but the program won't grow unless the demand is there, so say the advocates for wheelchair access. At the same time, the number of wheelchair-demanded trips has not dropped. There's still the same number of people who use wheelchairs out there asking for a cab ride, but the number of taxi cabs that service those wheelchair users has dropped in the rise of Uber and Lyft because, you know, the economy of taxis is hurting so much. There are so fewer drivers. So there's, you know, like thousands fewer taxi trips for wheelchair users, even though the same number of people are demanding the same number of trips. And now there's just no one to take them. There are planned routes you can get from paratransit. So if you know a week ahead of time you have a doctor's appointment, fine. But if, you know, tomorrow your friend says, hey, you want to go see a movie and you use a wheelchair and you need a cab, it's going to be tougher to get one now.
Do you think that if more people raise their voices like Ruthann, there would be more drivers?
Yeah, I mean, it's highly possible. If you rode Uber, if you said, we have a demand for this, we want to know. You know, they were looking at making this program. They did have a pilot. They had six people recruited initially. Four of those people dropped out. And as far as I know, last time I checked, there are two stable drivers using wheelchair access for Uber. It's under last time I checked, it was on an Uber WAV, wheelchair access vehicle. It might be a different acronym now, but it's there. It is somewhat available.
I don't think Uber will ever do this unless they're mandated by law, because the reality is if they start telling their drivers to provide handicap access, that's going to feed into a legal argument that these drivers are not independent contractors who are the CEOs of their own driving business, which is the rhetoric that Uber uses. It's going to make it look like these are employees. So Uber is really careful about what it instructs its drivers to do. I mean, it can cut them off the platform if they don't do certain things that have been suggested by Uber, but Uber, in terms of requiring drivers, has to be, they have to really think carefully about doing that. So I can't see them ever demanding that their drivers start providing a service for handicapped passengers unless it was mandated by a law.
And on top of that, it's just simply very expensive to do so. Like, the taxis always did it at a loss. They always did it at a loss of revenue. And it's like $20,000 to revamp a vehicle to have wheelchair access. It's a lot of money.
And what this speaks to is just, I mean, if we look even deeper into what Uber is and its business model, what you start realizing is that there's a reason why they're flooding the streets with their vehicles. It's because they're trying to get market share. This is a very predatory company, a very monopolistic seeking company who is trying to drive its competition out of business, which is taxis and Lyft. But it's also starting to have an impact on public transportation. The data that we do have is showing that more and more people are using Uber and Lyft out to the airport instead of using public transportation. Other cities are seeing similar declines in public transportation, including New York City, a decline in subway use. And so, people are sort of being seduced by the convenience of, you tap that app and a car shows up in 5 or 10 minutes. And, I'm sympathetic to, I live in the Outer Sunset in San Francisco. It would take 35 minutes for a taxi to show up. So I'm sympathetic that people like that vehicle showing up so quickly. But then they're sitting in traffic for another 20 to 25 minutes longer now because the traffic is getting so much worse, and they're not making the connection between tap the app, sit in traffic longer. And this is because the only way they can get that car to show up so quickly is they have to have a ton of cars flood the streets with Uber drivers. And so this is their business model. But when you look even deeper to that, what we're discovering is that Uber is actually subsidizing your ride. So when you tap your app and you get in that car and you take a ride, you, the passenger, are only paying about 40% of the cost of that ride. The other 60% is being paid for by venture capital funders, private funders who are giving Uber all this money because they want to be in on this latest cool, hip thing. That's a bigger subsidy than what public transportation gets. And so, in other words, what's happening here is that Uber are subsidizing all these rides in order to drive the competition out of business, including public transportation, so that at some point Uber has a monopoly over the market, and then we have to rely on Uber for our transportation needs. That's a frightening thought, that this company, where, in so many ways, does all these unethical things, and we haven't even talked about the many scandals that have Uber has been hit with, not only recently, but going back years.
Stephen, hold that thought. We're going to talk about this after the break, and we're just slammed with emails and phone calls. A lot of people saying that this fills a much-needed gap, and then a lot of people saying that traffic is out of control and this needs to be regulated. You talked about profits, and we just learned last week, here's a CBS headline, Uber's revenue revs up, but losses mount to $2.8 billion. And so we'll also talk about that. That is Stephen Hill, writer and author of many books, including Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. And Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez covers transportation for the San Francisco Examiner and writes about these issues on a regular basis. What are your thoughts on Uber and Lyft and how these companies have changed life in the Bay Area? We'd love to hear from you. What changes would you like to see, if any, if you're a driver, if you use these services? Give us a call. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up at 11, new to the KALW weekday lineup, Monday through Thursday at 11, On Point. From WBUR in Boston, Tom Ashbrook hosts a daily show that seeks to create a different kind of conversation about the country and the world we live in. Today at 11, coming up.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll speak with scientists about the Trump administration's attacks on science. Nationwide marches for science will take place on Earth Day this Saturday. There is also a call for scientists to run for elected office. Later in the week, we will be talking about early childhood care, and then the true cost of healthcare and why healthcare costs are so incredibly high. We hope you can join us for those shows. And if you have an idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about how Uber and Lyft are affecting Bay Area traffic and life in the Bay Area. We've got full lines and a lot of emails. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're joined by Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. He covers transportation and these issues for the San Francisco Examiner. And Stephen Hill is author of Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. And let's go next to, let me just scroll up here, Brian in San Francisco. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Great show. I'm a Lyft user. I love the convenience. I've never used Uber. I just wouldn't support, you know, such a company. But I've never had a bad experience with Lyft. I don't understand this complaint. I talk to Lyft drivers. They tell me they're making a good living, so the demand is definitely there. And if it wasn't, they would go drive in, you know, San Mateo, you know, or in Oakland, you know, if they weren't able to make a living. So the concept is that if you're an individual car owner and you drive into the city, you park your car, you're not using it for 90% of the time, you're creating the traffic. So there must be, if there's 25,000, 35,000, you know, app cars on the road, that means that there's 100,000, you know, people or more using them just when they need them on demand. So does this mean that you're advocating that the state, you know, tell consumers, individual car owners, that they're going to put a cap on the amount of car owners that can drive their own cars in San Francisco to, you know, decrease traffic?
All right. Well, thank you. So let's make sure we have the numbers right. Joe, you have reported that 45,000 Uber and Lyft drivers are now working in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Is there any way of knowing, for example, how many Uber and Lyft drivers are on the streets between, say, noon and 2 o'clock?
No, so these numbers come from the Treasurer's Office, and the Treasurer's Office was able to use their legal powers to get this data from Uber and Lyft, but it's only ever a point in time from when they requested it. And the reason they requested it is they wanted to send a request to file for a business license for Uber and Lyft drivers because they wanted to have them be licensed to do business in San Francisco. We find those numbers actually fluctuate a lot. So it was 45,000 at the time that I reported it. But before, even a month before that or so, or sometime before that, it was a much different number. And 12,000 people had dropped off the platform. Hmm. And it makes you wonder, why did 12,000 Uber and Lyft drivers stop driving for Uber and Lyft out of some 50 or so thousand? It makes you wonder what they found not so compelling about it anymore. But that number still fluctuates. In a recent piece of legislation by Aaron Peskin, I saw he cited a number from the Treasurer's Office that I haven't gone back to verify myself yet that said 55,000. So it's quite possible that that number has increased since I first reported the 45.
Now, do we know, and this speaks to this question, the people who are taking Uber and Lyft, are a large percentage of them former public transportation riders who maybe don't take the bus as much?
So that's a question I was really hoping you'd ask. Because basically, so a lot of people will make the argument of, well, Uber and Lyft take the cars off the road. I used to drive. Now I take Uber and Lyft. Now I don't have to drive. But a term used in economic circles and planning and transportation circles is latent demand. Demand that did not exist before, but now exists because a new convenience has arrived. So maybe I was a Muni rider, and it took me 40 minutes to get to work, and I paid, you know, $250 a day to take $250 one way, $5 a day or so, or for to take Muni. But maybe the cost of Uber is so cheap that I can do that instead of taking Muni. It created a demand in me for a personal ride that I never had before. And so there's an open question about how much latent demand has been created, how many people didn't used to take cabs or Ubers or Lyfts or anything that do now because it's so cheap.
Well, there have been studies about this. I'm not sure that any of them are definitive yet, but we do have studies to look at. And they have found that 50% of Uber, Lyft passengers, when they're asked, you know, if you didn't have this service available to you, what would you do? 50% of them say they would either take public transportation, they would bicycle, or they would walk. Hmm. So in other words, they're getting into a car now, which is less carbon friendly, worse for the environment, and they're not using other means that they would have used, which are better for the environment and contribute less to congestion. So this is the crux of the problem. There's no question that it's providing a service because we have such terrible taxi business in the United States and in San Francisco. I mean, again, in Berlin, the taxi service is quite good, and so there was no opportunity for Uber to get a foothold there. But because it was bad here, there was a need for something like this. But the question now is, how much can the streets bear? You have to understand that the streets are a public utility. You can't build more streets. You can't make more room for more vehicles. Everyone has to share it. So if there are more Uber drivers and Lyft drivers on the road, that means there's less space for your private vehicle, for delivery trucks, for public transportation, for all the other types of vehicles that are on the road today. So, I mean, I think there's no question that ride sharing is here to stay. The question is, how do we regulate all this to make sure that it doesn't overwhelm everything else that that needs to use those roads as well?
And just
one other point, Rose, to speak to the other caller's excellent question about these drivers making money. We do have studies on that as well, including Uber's own study. And what I usually say to people who say, well, I talk to my driver and, you know, he, and it is usually a he, says it's work going fine, he's making decent money. Check back with that driver in 6 months, in a year, because the clear pattern you see is that the longer you've been driving for Uber, the less you like it. And that's why Uber's own study showed that 50% of its drivers last a year on its platform, and then they leave. I mean, if it was such a great opportunity and such a great chance to be the CEO of your own driving business, why would people be leaving at such a high turnover rate? In fact, Uber is having a hard time keeping drivers in those chairs, and they put all sorts of incentives out there to try and get more drivers. I saw down the street from where I live in San Francisco at the gas station, Uber sent up a table with a tent, like a bake sale, and was going up to drivers at the to male drivers only at the gas pumps, trying to recruit them to drive because they're so desperate for drivers. And it's because they don't treat their drivers very well. They cut their pay on a regular basis. They as a driver, you have a feeling like if you have a problem, you can't really call anyone. You're just stuck with sending emails and getting caught in this loop where you don't really feel like your issues and grievances are being addressed. And, you know, so there's just multiple angles on this than just simply saying, well, I talked to my driver and he said it's actually going pretty well. We'll talk to that driver 6 months, a year from now, and I think you'll get a different story.
Well, I think as far as the full-time drivers go, you know, a lot of the data backs even up, like, you know, seeing the high burn rate of drivers. You know, I talk to the Teamsters a lot, and the Teamsters are trying to recruit Uber and Lyft drivers to kind of not quite unionize them because you can't unionize them, but to put them into some sort of groups that can advocate for their needs. And they find that the turnover of drivers is so great that they can't actually recruit anyone to advocate because as soon as they recruit someone who's really great, they're gone in like a month. But part-time drivers are a different story though. Some drivers, some people, you know, have like whatever, you're a teacher, you're whatever, you have some job, maybe you're a journalist, and then they find a lot of people part-time drive for Uber and Lyft. And the biggest cost to you when you're an Uber and Lyft driver is depreciation of the vehicle. That's the biggest thing. That's where you take the biggest hit. If you want to drive full-time, your vehicle's taking a lot of wear and tear. But if you're a part-time driver, that wear and tear is much less, and you are actually able to make a little extra money. Part-time drivers do better.
All right, just briefly, to get back to Brian's original question, he believes that if people were not taking Uber and Lyft, they would be driving into the city. And I guess this is why we need more data to find out if that's true. Right.
That's what the city wants. They want the data. They want to be able to figure this out for themselves.
Right. All right. Thank you for calling in, Brian. Let's go next to Chris in San Francisco. Hi, Chris.
Hey there. Well, one, I'm impressed that you found Joe Rodriguez being the the voice of moderation on an issue, which is listening to this show, it's as if this is a terrible plague upon the city. And I just would suggest that the reason why we're having these issues is because everybody wants a deterministic way to get a car. Your other caller, Stephen Miller, talked about being in the Outer Sunset. I've lived in the Sunset for a couple decades, and you couldn't get a cab there. You couldn't know that you would get a cab. The fact that, these services give you a deterministic way of getting a vehicle, it is a latent need. I don't understand the requirement to have public transportation as a consumer. What we want is transportation. I don't care if it's Lyft or the bus. And it's important that you guys haven't really talked about how much people love using this and what an amazing change it is for most people who use these services. And
I'll just have to speak up for low-income people who can't afford these services, who do have to rely on the bus to get around. I think that's really important to point out. So not everyone can afford taking these services. And it's Stephen Hill. So what about that, Stephen? A lot of people say, you know what? This is a much-needed service. People are using it, and it's needed. There's major consumer demand.
No, I think it's a valid point that has to be dealt with. And not only that, but, in other cities, you can make other points that certain parts of the city that are underserved by the taxi business, that they wouldn't go into it. There was a certain amount of redlining in the taxi business, and now there's at least some anecdotal evidence that ride-sharing has offered rides within neighborhoods that were neglected. So, you know, it's not just like it's all bad here, but what I'm trying to suggest is that we have to realize that there is a limit to how many cars you can put on the streets. And Uber doesn't care about that limit. Their goal is to flood the streets with cars because they want market share, they want monopoly, they want to drive the competition out of business, including public transportation. Would that be a good thing? I don't think so. Maybe your caller would think that's fine because he doesn't care if it's a private or a public system. But I think that what we need is a mix of systems, because you do have different types of people with different income levels,
right,
that can afford different things. But, you know, even beyond that, if you have a system in which, if your caller lives in the Outer Sunset, he knows, just as I know, that the bad traffic in San Francisco used to start once you get to like to Van Ness going downtown. Now it starts in the Outer Sunset. Mm-hmm. It starts in the Inner Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
So the traffic has gotten worse and worse. So that driver, that your caller is thrilled that the car shows up, that's understood. But that caller needs to understand that they are now spending more time in traffic as a result of that very car showing up so quickly, because they're doing it by flooding the streets with cars to make sure that there's enough cars there to service, to get there so quickly. There's a connection there that the caller is missing, and that many other people that are using this service and like it aren't making that connection about, you know, the car shows up quickly, but you're sitting in traffic longer now. That's why you're sitting in traffic longer.
I'm tickled pink to be called the voice of moderation in any situation, which is great. But I will point out that illegally, San Francisco does have a mandate to prioritize. I mean, your caller talked about, and rightly so, that he as a consumer cares only that he gets to his destination as quickly as possible, whether it be Lyft or the bus. But the city does have a legal mandate to push transit first. It's called a transit first policy. It was enacted, I believe, in the late 70s, although I could be wrong about that. And it basically enshrined in law that San Francisco policies should prioritize at all times buses and trains and forms of transit over private autos. And where Uber and Lyft falls in that, I would look to city officials to tell you. In fact, I haven't asked them that. I should ask them that. But it is a law that they should prioritize their public transit.
And just quickly, how would public officials determine how many cars to have on the road at any given time?
Well, there are lots of studies being done about these sorts of things. I mean, London and Stockholm, before they did their congestion zones, they did studies of these sorts of things. It's not that hard to do. Sometimes you see these kind of cables in the middle of the road. As cars drive over them, as vehicles drive over them, they're counting how many cars are there at any one time. So you do these sort of time studies, and you figure out how much traffic is in different regions of the city at any one time, and you start making determinations about what is a good amount and what's going to allow the free flow of traffic. They actually can study how fast vehicles are moving through a certain zone, and you can come up with an ideal speed that at that speed traffic is flowing freely. You're not sitting there at traffic lights. It's not taking you four stoplights to get through that stoplight, these sorts of things. They do these kinds of studies all the time. So that's not really the question. The question is that we've tended to leave traffic to sort of a free market, laissez-faire mentality. And, you know, that is fine when you don't have too many cars on the road, but when you start having so many vehicles on the road, it becomes a real problem. And the other thing that, you know, your previous caller needs to understand is that congestion when it comes to traffic, and you can make a similar argument with housing vacancies, it operates at the margin. You know, so let's say you have a city that can handle 100 cars comfortably, and you have 97 cars now. No one feels the problem. 98, 99, it still feels like a free flow of traffic. 100, now you're starting to feel a little bit. You go up to 101 and 102 cars, now suddenly you have congestion and people are starting to feel it. And the amount of traffic increase has only been 4%. It's the same with housing and vacancy with Airbnb. You know, Airbnb says, well, we have only a small number of the housing availability and all the housing stock in San Francisco, which is true. But the problem is that the vacancy rate happens at the margins. And so if you could, you know, when you start eating away at the 2 or 3% low vacancy rate,
Stephen,
that's
I'm
what causes the increase in prices.
Sorry to cut in, but we've got a ton of calls and we only have 5 minutes left. I want to get to as many as we can. Why don't we take a few calls and then we will get responses from our guests. Let's go to John in Oakland. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Appreciate getting the call. I am an Uber driver who's been driving for over a year, more than 5,000 trips, and also a retired management consultant. So I have pretty good experience of Uber, both from a perspective of how the industry and how Uber works, as well as direct experience as a driver. I would say just some of the things that your people are saying, I think, are quite wrong. Some of them are kind of going the wrong direction. For instance, I personally went to the Teamsters because I think, first off, Uber is a terrible company as in the way it's managed and the way it's run, how they treat their drivers. That's, you know, absolutely true.
Can you elaborate on that?
We're not going to try to even organize them. So they aren't making any effort, and there's nobody that I can tell that is trying to organize the drivers.
So, and John, can I ask you, as a driver, why do you say it's a terrible company?
Well, first off, you see all the reports and information that's coming in about how things are managed within the company, mostly in terms of the way they treat the drivers. I agree with the reporters there that they're continually trying to flood the market. They're continually manipulating the drivers to drive more for less money constantly. They have lowered the rates over the last few years. It seems to have plateaued, but the only reason I think it's plateaued is because they created this race to the bottom in pricing, and between them and Lyft, they can't get any further. With $3 billion a year in losses as a company, even the, you know, venture capitalists who think they're going to get a big payday at the end of it are kind of saying, hey, you know, we can't continue subsidizing riders forever.
Hey, John, we're almost out of time. What changes would you like to see as a driver?
Well, yeah, first of all, they need to raise the rates. But actually, I would say, first of all, Uber needs to put the tip button on their app so people can get a tip. And that's probably the biggest complaint for the drivers. But secondly, they need to raise the rate because essentially it's just like China dumping steel in the United States. Uber is dumping rides into the system at below market price. So that needs to be done by the government to say you can't do this.
John, would you stay on the line and give our producer your phone number? I'm thinking a panel of drivers would be really great in the future. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. I want to get One more perspective in. Joe is a cab driver. Hi, Joe. We're almost out of time, but go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Uber's based on a lie, so is Lyft. They tell their drivers not to tell their insurance companies that they drive for because they'd be a commercial vehicle. They'd be charged a higher rate, and also that, you know, there's no limit to them to the size of the car that they drive. We get discriminated against up and down the line. We try and drop off at the airport. We can't do it at the curb like we're supposed to because Uber's out there. And then, you know, it's just not fair.
Well, Joe, thank you. And please hold. We'd love to get your information, too. It'd be interesting to have a panel of Uber and cab drivers to talk about this. Joe, final thoughts here. What changes do you think we will see in the near future? Because one of your latest pieces in the Chronicle is about how SF officials are so fed up over traffic, they're considering suing the state of California to deal with this problem.
The Examiner, but thank you.
The Examiner, sorry.
It happens. But the what we'll see is we're going to see the city of San Francisco continue to argue to state officials that they want more control. I think it's coming to a point where it's not just transit officials, it's city officials near the top of government who are pushing to exercise more of this control. And we may even see the management of Uber statewide move out of the CPUC's offices and to the DMV or to other bodies. And that's under consideration now. So there's going to be a change in how Uber and Lyft are regulated locally. It's just how much and how soon.
Stephen Hill, final thoughts, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, ride-sharing is here to stay. It's shown its worth, but we need to just put the right rules around it and incorporate it into the overall transportation matrix in a way that's going to work for everybody. And right now, it's just running roughshod over this city and many other cities around the United States. So it's, it's sort of somewhat predictable that we're at this place. We just now need to figure out some good rules to put around it and not be swayed by the money that's being thrown around by Uber and others trying to lobby. I mean, they were very tied in with the Obama administration. They're now trying to get tied in with the Trump administration in order to prevent any kind of regulation, sensible rules that need to be there for transportation.
Stephen Hill is author of many books, including Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez covers transportation for the San Francisco Examiner and writes the weekly political On Guard column. Joe and Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for all of your phone calls and emails. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but we will definitely do another show on this issue. And coming up tomorrow, we will speak with scientists about the Trump administration's attacks on science. The administration has proposed cutting many departments, the National Institute of Health's budget by 18%, the Department of Energy's Office of Science by 20%, and the Environmental Protection Agency by a whopping 43%. This Saturday is Earth Day, and nationwide marches for science will be taking place. There's also a call for scientists to run for office. That's tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihei Razazan produced today's show. Stephanie Porcella is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us. It's Your Call.